Imagine going down to the local hardware store, right? And you buy a standard 12-inch ruler.
Okay, makes sense.
Yeah. But then you get home, you pull it out for a project, and you realize it's actually only 10 inches long.
Oh man, you'd take it right back.
Exactly. I mean, you'd probably call it a total scam, right? But according to the source material we are diving into today, you're actually accepting that exact same scam every single day.
Yeah, we really are.
Like, you're accepting it in your bank account, your career, your physical health, and your personal goals.
It's honestly the ultimate trick of human psychology and modern economics for that matter.
Right.
We love to think that when we measure something, we're dealing with a fixed reality. But the truth is, we're constantly living in this weird landscape where the tape measure itself is, basically made of rubber.
Welcome to this deep dive. Today's exploration is based entirely on chapter 13, which is titled, If Your Ruler Changes, Your Results Are Bullshit. And that's from the book Laws of Life, Book 2. Now, Build the System for Your Life by Jack Spirko.
It's a fantastic chapter.
It really is. And, as a practical systems coach, my day job is literally helping clients take these vague, fluffy life and career goals and turn them into hard, measurable standards. So I see people tricking themselves with fake measurements all the time.
Oh, I bet. And as an independent financial educator, my entire focus is teaching people about purchasing power, hard assets, and, long-term wealth building without all the typical industry hype.
Which is so needed right now.
Yeah, because my students spend so much time obsessing over the numbers in their bank accounts, but we rarely step back to look at the unit of measurement itself. And, well, that is where the real manipulation actually happens.
Totally. So, to set the stage for you listening, the core law of this chapter just hits like a ton of bricks. It states if your ruler changes, your results become false or useless.
Simple, but brutal.
Exactly. And your mission for today, as you listen to us unpack this, is to figure out where you are secretly moving the goalposts in your own life and how to build a fixed system for your wealth, health, and morality.
Yeah, and to really grasp the macro scale of this, the text sets up this fascinating thought experiment. It's called the Island of the Changing Ruler.
I love this story. Break it down for us.
Right, so it's a brilliant way to visualize this really complex problem. So picture this remote island. They have their own money called Island Bucks. The economy is thriving, but as the population grows, timber becomes incredibly scarce.
Okay.
And suddenly, young people on the island just can't afford to build houses anymore. Now, generations ago, a king mandated that all houses must be at least 1,300 square feet with 3 bedrooms.
Which, I mean, sounds like a pretty good rule originally, right? To guarantee a baseline standard of living.
Exactly. But with the timber shortage, that mandate is now causing a massive housing crisis.
So the politicians are totally panicking, right? Because the new trees they planted won't be ready to harvest for another, what, 3 or 4 generations?
Yeah, it's a long way off.
And they know the people will riot if the king openly lowers that 1,300 square foot housing standard because it just looks like a massive failure of leadership.
Right. No politician wants to admit things are getting worse.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So a really shrewd advisor comes up with this completely invisible solution. He says, hey, let's just reduce the official measurement of the inch by 1/12 of its size.
It's so sneaky. They literally redefine the core unit of reality.
Right.
So an official foot still technically has 12 inches on paper, but each of those individual inches is physically smaller.
Which is mind-blowing. So suddenly, board lumber magically drops in price by over 8% because, well, you're just getting less wood per official foot.
Yeah, and everyone thinks it's a win. The timber companies are happy because they get more money per actual tree. The buyers are thrilled because they can suddenly afford these smaller homes that are still officially scamped 1,300 square feet.
And the politicians look like absolute heroes. To put that in perspective for like my coaching clients, it's like telling someone who wants to run a mile that we're just going to move the finish line 100 yards closer.
Right, they still get that dopamine hit.
Yeah. They get to post on social media that they ran a mile, but the actual physical distance they traveled is totally compromised. And on the island, this quick fix actually works for a little while anyway.
Right, until the next king takes over.
Right.
The population keeps growing, the price of timber creeps right back up, and the real trees still aren't ready. So what do?
Let me guess, they do it again.
They run the exact same play. They shrink the inch by another 12th. And if you fast forward 3 generations, a foot on this island is now only 75% of its original size.
Wow. And the ripple effects of that have to be catastrophic. because people don't just use the foot to measure houses, you know?
Exactly. They use it to manufacture fishing nets, to engineer steel rods, to cut rope for sailing.
So the structural integrity of the entire society completely rots from the inside out. Buildings collapse, nets fail, and it all ends in this violent revolution and a massive economic depression.
It does. And this is where the story brilliantly pivots to modern economics.
Mm-hmm.
When the new government takes over on the island, they realize shrinking the physical ruler is way too dangerous. It's too obvious eventually.
Right.
So instead of shrinking the inch, the island bankers come up with a new, much less obvious trick, which is fractional reserve lending. They basically just print more island bucks.
Okay, wait, pause right there. Let's do a quick explain like I'm five moment for this.
Sure.
Because how do you create money just by lending it? To a lot of people, that sounds like literal magic. Can you break the mechanics of that down?
I'd be glad to.
Ooh.
So let's say you deposit 100 island bucks into the bank, right? Under a fractional reserve system, the bank is only legally required to hold a fraction of that in reserve.
Okay, so let's say 10%.
Right, so 10 bucks. They take the other 90 bucks and they lend it out to someone else who wants to, say, buy a car. Got it. That person pays the car dealer, and then the car dealer deposits that 90 bucks right back into the bank. The bank keeps 9 bucks in reserve and lends out the remaining 81.
Oh, wow. So for my initial $100 deposit, the bank has effectively created hundreds of new dollars circulating out there in the economy.
Precisely. So the money supply just explodes, but the actual amount of timber, fish, and labor on the island stays exactly the same.
Okay, I see. You have vastly more money chasing the exact same amount of goods and services. So prices inevitably inflate everywhere, not just on housing, but on literally everything.
Yes.
You know, this story sounds like a crazy dystopian fable, but the text drops the hammer on this. We literally live in this society.
We absolutely do. I mean, the value of the U.S. dollar has been in a real decline for well over a century, and it went completely parabolic after 1971.
What happened in 71?
That's when the system moved off the gold standard. That removed the fixed standard.
Yeah.
There was no more hard ruler for the money.
Hold on. I want to push back here for a second just to play devil's advocate. If the dollar is dying and everything is inflating, how come my iPhone does 10 times more than it did 5 years ago for roughly the same price?
Of course.
Or like flat screen TVs. I can buy a massive TV today for a fraction of what a heavy, low-quality box TV cost in the 1980s. Isn't innovation naturally fixing the ruler for us?
That is a great point, and it's a very common illusion that trips people up. The text clarifies this dynamic perfectly, actually. The things that are coming down in price are entirely technology-based.
Oh, okay.
Human innovation and manufacturing efficiency make technology much cheaper to produce over time. The inertia of that innovation is so powerful that it temporarily outpaces the devaluing dollar.
So it hides the inflation.
Exactly.
Mm.
But look at everything that isn't riding a massive technological curve. Housing, healthcare, food, education. Those prices are skyrocketing.
Because the dollar itself, our actual economic ruler, is shrinking. There are two incredible quotes referenced here in the text. Henry Ford warned way back in 1922 that if the people understood the monetary system, there would be a revolution before tomorrow morning.
It's so true.
And John Kenneth Galbraith noted that the process by which money is created is so simple that the mind is repelled by it. And I love how Spurko's text adds a crucial layer to that, saying it's so simple and absurd that the mind is repelled.
Which really exposes the biggest financial lie we are constantly told, you know?
Yeah.
The idea that rising prices are just a natural, unavoidable sign of a growing economy.
Right.
The text references a concept highlighting that in a healthy, innovative society, prices should actually go down because we get better and more efficient at making things.
That makes total sense.
Prices aren't going up. The purchasing power of your dollar is just going down.
Think about your own grocery bill this week or, you know, the size of the cereal box you just bought. You see this intangible reality every single day.
Oh, the shrinkflation is everywhere.
Yes. You go to the hardware store for a 2x4 piece of lumber. If you open up a wall in a house built in 1900, a 2x4 is actually 2 inches by 4 inches of solid wood.
And today?
Today, it's 1.5 by 3.5 inches. That is literally shrinkflation in physical form. The ruler is shifting right in front of us.
And even local governments play this game. Constantly. They mandate minimum square footage for homes, claiming it protects property values and neighborhood character.
Sure, sounds nice on paper.
But as the text points out, all they are really protecting is their own property tax revenue by ensuring homes remain artificially expensive.
Wow. And this brings us to a massive pivot in the material, because over a century of fiat money, which is a constantly moving economic ruler, has created this psychological contagion.
Yes, the mindset has spread.
It has trained society to believe that changing the standard is the default solution to literally every problem, not just financial ones.
The mindset of the banks and governments has fundamentally infected human behavior. When a system fails now, the cultural instinct is no longer to fix the failure or demand better performance. It is to just lower the bar so the failure suddenly looks like a success.
It's so fascinating reading through the source material, because the text looks objectively at some pretty heated societal issues, like the education system. And we should be clear here, we are just reporting what's in the text impartially, not taking a political side, but just observing the mechanics of the ruler changing in real time.
Right, just looking at the systems.
Exactly. For instance, when kids started struggling to pass physical education requirements, did schools increase exercise time and radically improve the nutritional quality of school lunches?
According to the text, absolutely not.
No. They lowered the PE standard so everyone could pass without trying, while still letting fast food contracts into the cafeterias. And there is a direct correlation with childhood obesity right there.
We see the exact same structural mechanics in college admissions, too. Once government-backed student loans entered the picture, it created a practically unlimited monetary supply for tuition.
Right.
So the cultural marketing message became, well, every single person must go to college. This created massive artificial demand. But there was a logistical problem.
What was that?
Not everyone met the actual academic admission standards.
Oh, so instead of improving K through 12 education so students could actually clear the bar, the universities just changed the ruler.
Exactly. They lowered admission standards. Because anyone can secure a loan now, schools let them in to study these abstract subjects without clear market demand.
And the end result is that the financial cost of a degree went astronomically up, while the actual market value of that degree completely plummeted.
It is the ultimate cascade effect. But what really hits home for me is how this macro-level ruler shifting corrupts our micro-level personal behaviors. The text lays out several distinct areas where we deceive ourselves on a daily basis.
Instead of listing all of them, let's dissect a few of the most dangerous ones, because this is where human psychology really traps us. Let's look at time versus busyness.
Whoa, that's a huge one.
People constantly measure the value of their day by how busy they felt. But busyness is a completely fake ruler.
It is. And why do we do it?
Mm-hmm.
Because being busy provides an immediate dopamine hit, you know? It makes us feel vital and important to our workplace or our family.
Right. But time is fixed, and frantically running around answering emails doesn't mean you actually accomplished anything. Output is the only real metric.
That ties directly into another trap mentioned in the book, competency versus credentials.
Oh, yeah. In my coaching practice, I see people constantly chasing another certificate or, you know, another seminar. It's a safety blanket.
Because competency is proven by raw performance in the real world, which is scary and involves the risk of failure.
Exactly. While credentials can simply be bought or granted for compliance, we substitute the safety of the credential for the hard reality of actually being good at what we do.
Another fascinating contrast the text makes is actual risk versus perceived fear. We have developed this habit of measuring danger with our anxiety instead of doing the actual math.
Like watching the news all day.
Yes. If you watch the news, you might feel like the world is more dangerous than ever, so you make these conservative, fear-based decisions in your life and your investments. You're using your emotional state as a ruler rather than statistical reality.
How about health markers versus body weight? Stepping on a scale is easy, but weight alone is a deeply flawed ruler.
Right, because muscle weighs more than fat, for one.
Exactly. And the text points out a brutal truth here. Skinny people die in hospitals every single day. If you only look at your weight, you might starve yourself to hit a number on the scale, but you're actually cannibalizing muscle. The real fixed markers of health are strength, mobility, and comprehensive blood work.
And perhaps the most culturally relevant one right now is truth versus consensus. Truth doesn't shift just because the crowd feels differently this week. The text is incredibly direct on this point. There is no such thing as your truth. There's only the truth or being wrong.
But society has adopted consensus as a substitute ruler because standing alone in the truth is socially uncomfortable.
Yeah, it takes courage to hold a fixed ruler when everyone else is bending theirs.
So if the world's macro systems are this broken and our own psychology is wired to cheat the ruler, what do we actually do?
Well, the author is clear that while we can't fix the world's broken systems, we have total control over our reaction to them.
There's this great anecdote in the chapter about a young woman who worked for the author. She told him she was taking some time to work on herself. So we asked her a simple question, like, what does that actually mean?
Right. Was she taking specific classes? Was she journaling daily? Was she traveling to a specific place?
And she had absolutely no answer. She was completely stunned.
Because she was using a fake ruler.
Right. Because, as the text bluntly calls it, without a measurable plan, saying you're working on yourself is just mental masturbation. It feels good to say, but it produces nothing.
Nothing at all.
Real personal work requires a hard standard. So let's look at how to apply this fixed ruler to three key areas of life. Let's start with your domain, investing and wealth management.
The application here is a massive paradigm shift. You have to stop measuring your wealth in dollars and start measuring it in purchasing power.
Okay, unpack that.
The text gives a terrifying mathematical reality check regarding Social Security. A child born today, who will theoretically retire around the year 2090, will need to receive about $150,000 a year just to match the purchasing power of today's median $24,000 payout.
That is staggering. Let that sink in for a second. $150,000 a year, decades from now, will buy you what a poverty-level baseline buys you today.
Exactly. The numeric value goes up, but the purchasing power is just crushed.
So what's the solution?
The actionable solution is to move your wealth out of declining fiat dollars and into hard assets, real estate, equities, gold, or Bitcoin. You need assets that are fundamentally finite and can be leveraged.
Because they can't print more of a house.
Right. And when you need capital later in life, lenders don't give loans against cash. They give loans against real property and hard commodities.
That leads right into the second application area, personal development and growth. The author shares a very vulnerable personal story about pursuing an RCDD credential.
Which is a highly technical telecommunications design certification.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. And he poured massive amounts of his actual life force into studying trick questions just to pass an exam that had a 71% failure rate.
Wow.
And for what? Just to add four letters to his business card.
But did it make him better at his job?
No. It didn't dramatically increase his competency in the field. It was a fake metric of progress that completely exhausted him. He realized he could have used those hundreds of hours to become a significantly better manager, a more persuasive salesperson, or just a better husband and father.
That's a hard realization.
The lesson is crystal clear here. Do not chase credentials unless they definitively, measurably advance your career or life. Competency is the fixed ruler, not the piece of paper.
And the third application area might be the most difficult for all of us, setting a personal moral code. This is where the moving ruler is the most insidious because it happens in these tiny small moments.
Right. The text uses the classic office birthday cake dilemma.
Oh, we've all been there.
We really have. You were on a strict diet, you've been disciplined all week, but it's Susan's birthday in the break room, so you justify eating the cake. Or you're training for an event and supposed to be off alcohol, but you're at a networking party, so you have a drink to just fit in.
Right. We compromise our standards constantly to alleviate social pressure.
And the text gives a brilliant, hard rule to combat this. If a personal standard must change, you only ever change it on a rest day through conscious analytical choice.
That is so smart.
Yeah. You never change your workout standard when you are sitting in the car 5 minutes from the gym, feeling tired. You make the choice when you are thinking clearly, not when you are acting emotionally.
Which brings us to the ultimate daily standard suggested in the book. It's a simple, ruthlessly measurable rule. It's just end every day with more X than I started with.
That's it.
That's it. It's such a powerful mechanism. The author talks about how he uses an app called Strike to automatically buy $10 in sats, which are tiny fractions of Bitcoin, every single day at 3 a.m.
Okay.
So he physically wakes up at 5 a.m., and he is mathematically wealthier in hard assets than he was when his head hit the pillow.
And what's great is that he emphasizes you don't have to use Bitcoin or even spend $10. You can use platforms like Robinhood or Webull to buy just $1 of an ETF or a solid stock every single day.
Right. The point isn't the specific asset. The point is the fixed standard of daily wealth accumulation. It's an automated, non-moving ruler that guarantees progress regardless of how you feel that day.
So how do we systematically lock all of this into our lives? The text provides an actionable framework called the FIXED formula, F-I-X-E-D. Let's walk through it.
Sounds good.
So F stands for find the real metric. You have to strip away the emotional noise and identify the one core thing that proves actual progress.
Because if you can't define what success looks like in concrete, undeniable terms, you're really just guessing.
Exactly. Next is I, inspect your ruler. You need to routinely ensure your standard hasn't drifted into ego.
Oh, like if you catch yourself using phrases like close enough or good for now.
Yes. Realize that those aren't measurements. They are negotiations with your own discipline.
That's a great way to put it. Then X is for X out fake metrics. You have to ruthlessly eliminate measures that inflate easily without producing real-world results.
Like staying busy?
Right. Or feeling confident or collecting meaningless credentials. If a metric can be manipulated to look good without requiring better output, trash it.
Love that. Then E is establish a hard standard. You must lock the standard in place before the pressure shows up. Like we talked about with the birthday cake, you commit when you are thinking clearly, so your body obeys when you are thinking emotionally.
And finally, D, do the work. Measure honestly and act on the data.
Because measurement without adjustment is pointless, right?
And an adjustment without measurement is guesswork. Over time, that absolute clarity removes the exhaustion of indecision.
If we distill Law 13 down to its absolute essence, a moving ruler guarantees fake results. Most of society today resolves its discomfort by changing the ruler instead of doing the hard work of changing their behavior.
That is the core issue.
And while you cannot control the rulers manipulated by the government or the banks or the academic institutions, you have absolute sovereignty over the rulers you apply to your own life.
Honest results make improvement possible. Without a stable, unforgiving standard, there is literally nothing real to improve.
The text ends the chapter by asking the reader to install 3 specific lines of code into their mental computer. And I want you, the listener, to program these into your mind right now. Here is line 1. Computer, when I evaluate anything, ensure I am using a fixed standard to do so.
Crucial.
Line 2. Computer, when I am pleased with a result, examine it critically, even harshly, to be sure the satisfaction is warranted.
Don't settle for the fake win.
Exactly. And line 3. Computer, remind me always to track wealth and purchasing power.
Those are powerful operating instructions for navigating a world that constantly wants you to accept fake measurements. And, you know, if you want to dive deeper into these concepts and explore the resources mentioned in the text to build your own fixed systems, you can find them by visiting jackslaws.com.
We spend this time looking at how banks and governments shave an inch off the ruler to manipulate the macro system. But as you go about the rest of your day, look closely at your own tape measure.
Seriously, take a hard look.
Look at your fitness, your career goals, and your relationships. Ask yourself, what is the one area of your life where you are secretly shaving an inch off your own ruler right now just to feel a little more comfortable?
That is a question worth answering honestly. And be sure to check out jackslaws.com for more tools on how to fix that ruler.
Keep your standards fixed, and we'll catch you on the next deep dive.